A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. This happy voice is Ken Napsa.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we are here to talk about breaking news from a long time ago. It's our Star Wars news show, and it's one of those kind of slow news weeks, but that means we're going to have more time to discuss some of the wild and weird stories out there, plus a This Day in Star Wars History. Before we get to that, we do want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. I don't even say those words anymore. They just flow out of my tongue from muscle memory. And a little bit later, we have our Four Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And even though we're suggesting one, there's so many books clearly out there to choose from, so you can help the show and also help yourself. We also have some ask going on. We love asking because it's something that's actually hard for us to do. It's a challenge for us all to be like, hey, please, fans, can we have some more? But we have, we're having so much fun on the live shows on YouTube, Patreon, and Discord discussion that's going on, and just hanging out with our fans and just being more out there, literally sometimes with our faces. But Joseph, we have an ask related to all of that going on.
That is right. I mean, part of our asks today are really just celebrating that asked and answered. Hopefully, yeah. we'll get better at the asking as we continue to get positive responses. So a couple of asks wrapped up in thank yous. A's and I'm going to leave that one alone. Anyway, So the Patreon page, that we really want to just keep asking about the Patreon page, let you all know that we are giving more focus to it. We have reworked it. There are new tiers and some new rewards. The biggest new thing we're doing with Patreon is that we're going to be doing a series of Indiana Jones podcasts entitled Indiana Jones and the Perilous Podcast. And we want to let you know that the first episode of that, chapter one of that seven episode series, is going to be available on Patreon Monday, March 20th. We will be releasing them every few weeks. We'll be very clear and honest with the schedule as we go. We got that whole Star Wars celebration in the middle of things to deal with. But then once the film Dial of Destiny comes out, after that, we'll make these available to the public and everybody as well. But if you want to be with us on the Indiana Jones journey, go check out the Patreon page. And the thank you wrapped in that is we set a goal of $1,600, and we blew past that. We are past that, so thank you, everyone, for getting past that. What we're doing at $1,600 is we're going to record a special live Star Wars ranked live stream for patrons. So we'll be doing that. We'll be thinking up some more goals, but for now, we're all eyes on Monday, March 20th. So that is the Patreon part of it. Ken, any thoughts on that one?
Other than just a big thanks to all of you to make this you know, a reality. We the world of the podcast is changing. The world of podcast business is changing, and so that's it was just the right time to not only refocus on Patreon to honestly keep the show going strong. It will always be going, but we want to be going strong. But also, to, as Joseph said, to kind of honor those on there who've been supporting us and that community that makes us so strong. And it's been a lot of fun. And you know, I've been performing and doing things for decades now. So is Jen. So is Joseph. It doesn't make that any easier sometimes. And you're like, hey, pay attention to me, or hey, do you like me? Check yes or no. And so it's a struggle for me personally, speaking for myself. And it's just been fun to see you all have fun and join the community. So many, every time you go into Discord, you pop up. And everyone's waving to you, and some names I got to go in and say hi to. So it's been a lot of fun. So that's, there you go. That's my comment. Truth and honesty and gratitude.
That is great. You're right. The modern internet is just massive, massive, passing a note in health class going, are we cool? Do you like me? So yes,
check
that's
yes
great.
No.
Check yes or no. Check maybe later. that's fine too. Along those lines, something that we really wanted to do, we were excited to do, put some work into finding the venue, getting all the ticket links up, and we are announcing on the podcast here that we do have a live stand-up comedy show that Ken and I will be doing in London when we're there for Star Wars Celebration. It's something we really wanted to happen. It was not easy to set up from across the old pond, but we did manage to do it and really rushed to get those ticket links up this past Friday. And we were really rewarded in that there was a very fast, very great response. As we're recording this on Monday morning, there's only one ticket left. So a couple bits of news about the tickets for the live show. It's on Sunday, April 9th. We have a total capacity of seating, but then we can add a few more seats. We can sell a few more tickets for standing room. So we're going to add, if we sell out all of the seated tickets, we'll add a few more spaces and be clear that it's standing room and keep the tickets a little cheaper for standing room. So that's the one announcement there. The other thing is an apology that I want to offer in some information if anybody needs it. So the venue that we found is a nice little intimate venue in the basement of a pub. But because it is in a basement of a pub, there is no elevator. It's just stairs. So there is an accessibility issue. And totally 100% my fault. I forgot to mention that on our ticket link. I added it a couple hours after the ticket link went up because I remembered that I needed to do that. In all honesty, this is the first time I've used Eventbrite. I used to use brown paper tickets, and brown paper tickets used to make you answer whether or not it was accessible. Mm-hmm. So in my fervor to get it up, I just missed it, and I sincerely apologize. If that is a problem for anyone, a conflict for anyone, and you've already bought tickets, we will absolutely refund. And my sincere apologies for not getting that information on the ticket link from the very beginning, which it should have been.
No, hey, I think that's going to be appreciated by the folks out there. And look, if there's anything we can do to help when you're there to to get you where you need to be. I am absolutely there for that. But we also know that's not always the case. And I stand by Joseph on, hey, we are very sorry about that. Here's the truth. Here's where we're at. And it's going to be a fun show. I'm looking forward to that one a lot. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And to end on the positive, it was really, really gratifying to see the excitement and see how fast the tickets went. So thank you all. And we can't wait to see you in London.
I cannot wait. I'm so excited. I had no idea what I was going to say. And then the moment that link went up, suddenly my mind was like, here's your set list. So
nice.
All right. Before we get into the news, we always do like to catch up. And it's important to catch up. This life adventure, Star Wars adventures thing is just a fun way for us to talk about Star Wars in our lives. But you out there, y'all need to take a breath. Remember, you're a human here on this planet, and talk about what you're experiencing, good and bad, before we just dive into Star Wars. So that's one of the reasons we do this. Jen, where did Star Wars find you these last few days?
You know, this past week was all about The Mandalorian, The Mandalorian's return. So I was so excited to finally watch the first episode. And I was delighted. As you guys know, and some of you listening, mm-hmm. I am obsessed with the creatures and the alien species in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And there were so many of them. I was like freeze framing. I was like, wait, which species is this? And I did a little video. And then somebody corrected me, rightfully so. And I had a moment, a twinge, where I was like, I got something wrong. And old me would have been mortified and taken the video down and been so embarrassed. The new me was like, I have to remember, these are made up species. Like, this is not like real life. Like this, you know, there's like so many different subspecies of the Nyctos, but I got wrong. I said it was an Azamel in the folk band playing with a Twi'lex. It was not an Azamel, friends. It was a Gran. And the difference, if you don't know, which I had forgotten, the Azamels have six eyes. It's the species that we saw in the lodge in Solo at the Sabacc game. But Grans only have three eyes. And this species in the folk band was a Gran. And I was just, it was one of those moments where I was like, I spend a lot of time on caring about these things. And it was even crystallized further when my daughter was playing with a Tauntaun, and she was calling it, I forget what she was calling it. I was like, that's not a blah, blah, blah. It's a Tauntaun. She goes, where do Tauntauns live? I was like, well, they live in the cold on in the snow on Hoth. And then I realized she doesn't know that this is not real. Like, I need to let her know that this is not a real life creature. Hoth is not a real life planet. I was like, it's a make-believe character from Star Wars. And she just was like, oh, okay. But anyways, it's all fun. It's all make-believe. And Grans have three eyes and Azamels have six.
Hey, you know what? We've all been there, number one. And I can't, in nine seasons of doing the show, there's definitely been a few occasions where I've gone back and clipped out when I said storm guy instead of stormtrooper or Joseph. But I think I may have been said something wrong. It's just, we have so much knowledge in our head that it just sometimes fails to come out.
Yep, we all make mistakes. It is totally natural. And I think I want to do, we've been trying to do more YouTube shorts. I think I want to do a YouTube short about the absolute confusion about, hey, when we were kids, these three characters were Klaatu, Brada, Nikto. Yes. Now Nikto's a species and Klaatu is one. And maybe Klaatu's Klaatu. But also, there's a different one who used to be Klaatu who's also named Woof.
So, yes.
And Barada's a Klaatuinian. Klaatu isn't a Klaatuinian. He's a Nikto. It's a almost who's on first from what they did to us as kids.
That'd be a great show. That'd be great. I mean, look, I'm still bitter over it's an AT-AT because Kenner told me it was. Like, what do you want from me? What do you want from me, kids?
I was thinking about that one today. It's not a debate. It's just when you were born. That's not a debate. It's just, you know, when a website asks you what year you were born, it's not like, ooh, what's your take?
Yes.
It's when you were born. If you were born a certain time, you only ever heard AT-AT. And if you weren't, you didn't.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's right. Well, Jen, you still got a home here at Force Center, no matter how many eyes you recognize on a character.
Thank you.
Love that there. Mine was pretty simple. I get in these moods where I'm doing the cardio, I'm getting on the treadmill. I did the Mando rewatch and the Boba Fett rewatch. And It's kind of like, well, I still like doing extended cardio sessions. I got to watch more Star Wars. So I finally started my Obi-Wan Kenobi rewatch, which I haven't seen since the show aired, other than little bits here and there. And man, not only just reaffirm my love and appreciation for the show. And again, as we always say, understand some things don't work for everyone. There's beats here and there. We go, oh, yeah, I don't know. But man, especially after that first episode, just watching this show confirm Leia's place in the legacy of the story, confirming her importance, basically having Bail say that to Obi-Wan, like, mm-hmm. you know, that means a lot to me as a Star Wars fan, as someone who not only just grew up with Leia, but influenced by her as well in the character. So I love that. And I just love, I just had that thought of like, even though we experienced this back in April and May during celebration, like I'm watching Ewan McGregor do Obi-Wan Kenobi again. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not lost on me. That kind of stuff doesn't wash over any sins of the show. You know, I think sometimes people take that stuff like that. It just means simply, wow, I'm very grateful that we have this experience and we get to dive into it. And it's been fun watching the show again. I'm through three episodes and just seeing all the stuff that they got into and how deep it was and how that first episode did a great job of going, by the way, here's everyone's themes and goals and drives and lessons that are going to be learned. It's all right here, right? Which is what you kind of want out of a episode one of a show or a season or a first act movie. Totally get it. Totally get the final draft format of it all. But it was just to see it and see it more clearly now that this show is behind us. It was a lot of fun. So I love that when Star Wars creeps up on you, even though it's the thing you think about every day. So so from that Kenobi talk, I pitch it to Joseph and his Kenobi love and heart.
Oh, yeah, man. I really enjoyed my rewatch in that first episode in particular. You know, we all used to joke about, we would take just an indie film that's 2 hours of Kenobi being depressed in the desert. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that first hour is not only exactly what you said, Ken, it is setting up all of the themes and all of the goals, but it's so great because you just get quality time with Obi-Wan Kenobi in this different emotional state. The performance is amazing. I love that first episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love it. Yeah, my Star Wars adventures this week were weird. Yeah, because it was all the Mando thrill and excitement and the rush to talk about it. And then I rewatched it with my wife and chatted through with her. And that is all great. There definitely, you know, some ups and downs with the Mando discourse. We got some questions about that coming up in our Cues of the Force episode later this week. But I was managing to be like, hey, you know what? Everybody can have opinions. It's all good. I'll stay there here enjoying the band with the Grand, which I really did. I love that band. So I got a haircut this week. The person I go to is great. We often chat about movies and trips in the general SoCal area. Always great. And it was a super friendly conversation, but we got into Star Wars and, you know, she's somebody like, oh, I watch stuff, but like, oh, does Bad Batch have another season? I was like, oh yeah, you got to check it out. It's great. And she was like, Mandalorian's back, right? And it's like, oh yeah, it is. You got to check it out. Anyway, it slid into her sharing some of her husband's opinions. And it was one of those like, oh, everybody has a right to their opinions. I think I probably disagree with your husband about a lot of things. And trying to have a very, very polite and understandable, you know, conversation. And there was no conflict at all, you know, and I would happily talk to her husband in person about it. But it was just it was a step back of, you know, how the shows themselves have so much impact on our life, but so do the discussions, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where you can start to see even sort of secondhand. Oh, he likes this one. He doesn't like this one. Great. Cool. Great. Yeah. That's fine.
That is fine.
Yeah. But I think they would both like Bad Batch. And I was like, okay, they hadn't watched Andor yet. And it's like, I think your husband's going to love Andor. I think you're both going to love Bad Batch. I can't wait to talk to you about those. So it was actually, at the end of the day, very, very positive in that, well, let's focus on the parts that I bet we're all going to like.
I love it.
Me, my stylist, and your husband I've never met. These are the ones we're all going to like together.
is that a book of poetry? Love that. I ran into, quite frankly, a Star Wars arch enemy at a party Friday night. Someone I tried to avoid talking Star Wars with, and this person asked me, "Hey, you see Mando?" I went, "Yeah, you like it?" I went, "Yeah, great." And he goes, "Ah, me too." And I go, "But I gotta say, Bad Batch is probably my favorite Star Wars show right now." "Really? I don't like it." I said, "Oh, too bad. I like it." "Okay." And then we went on with our life. And it was great. It was refreshing.
Yes. That was fair enough. That was I'm going to throw one other thing out there for my Star Wars adventures, Ken. My planned thing to talk about this week on Star Wars Adventures is that listener Will Dixon made us those wonderful custom figures that you mailed me, Ken, from our P.O. box. Yeah. I have been waiting for a calm and special time to open them. Yes. Because I'm so excited. I want to have a calm and special time. And I've failed to find a calm and special time, but I'm going to this week because I can't wait to see them. And I'm so touched that Will made those for us.
Yes. Thank you.
Great stuff indeed. I still actually got my time grappler in my hands a lot of times when I record. So if occasionally you hear a little drop, it's one of his hammers falling out and hitting. All right, let's get to some Star Wars news, my friends. The headline reads, "The true story of the Star Wars holiday special to be revealed." Like I said, slower news week. We got Star Wars Celebration coming. Mando is out. But I like these kind of stories. I like kind of the weirder corners of the Star Wars news world. And Jeremy Kuhn and Steve Kozak's documentary, which was announced a couple years ago, A Disturbance in the Force, How the Star Wars Holiday Special Happened, will finally have its debut at South by Southwest. And a trailer was dropped featuring interview clips from, among many people, Weird Al, Kevin Smith, the late Gilbert Gottfried, and even friend of the show, Bonnie Burton. So I watched the trailer. I thought it was something we would talk about here. I sent it out. So, Joseph, Jennifer, thoughts on the trailer and the project? And I have some follow-up questions to that, but we can start in general. Jennifer, we would be remiss if we did not start a holiday special conversation with your thoughts.
All right. All right, let's get into this. So, as you all know, I love...
Chihuahua.
Exactly. I love the Star Wars Holiday Special. This trailer reminded me of those VH1 specials of I Love the 80s, I Love the 70s. You remember those?
I do.
From VH1, yeah. So, and what's funny is that they actually had some of the same people that were in those specials, like Gilbert Godfrey, Paul Scheer, right? I'm sure even Kevin Smith probably made an appearance. Here's what I would love. I would love a real documentary, no shade. I want an honest documentary that talks with the people and the performers who actually made the holiday special and uncovers the drama. And gives viewers like an understanding of what they were thinking when they made the special, what that time period was. Show me news clippings. Show me the shows that were popular at that time. Show me the celebrities that were popular, because it's like a time capsule, right? I want a true behind the scenes look at how the special was made, not like people commenting. I mean, and I get it. Like, these are people who experienced the holiday special firsthand, watching it at home and whatnot. We love Bonnie. Bonnie has a hilarious, like, she has so much great insight.
Yeah.
She actually was on my Jedi beat where I talked about the holiday special.
Yes.
And she was fantastic. So we love Bonnie. But I just feel like Bruce Valanche is still alive. Like, you can, and he's always talking about it. Like, why not? Maybe they do interview him. I don't know. But
I will say, I'll say this, Jen. I think he's listed in there.
Okay, good. Good.
But again, it's the approach. And I think Donny Osmond is at least.
Yes, he is.
They have some Weird Osmond clips in there as well. But yeah, I think what you're talking about, Jen, is the tone and tenor of it, right?
Yes. Yes. I'll pitch it to you guys before I go off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's the question. Those are some of the follow-up questions of what do we want to learn from this? And Joseph, what do we maybe hope this documentary avoids doing, or some of the thoughts that we might have? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think Jennifer and I often agree, but this is, we agree with almost the exact same words in the exact same notes. You have my lightsaber, Jennifer, on this one. The trailer looked fun. I love the fun vibe. I love that Bonnie's in it. So I know the entire thing won't be it's bad. There will, because I know Bonnie loves it and sees, you know, the value of it. From looking at it from lots of different perspectives. So I know I feel like this is just going to be like, you know, a bashing. I think what I feel about the holiday special is, you know, it is bonkers, mm-hmm. and that's part of its charm, and we should poke fun at it, and we should ask the question, what the bleep?
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
part of the fun. But the other part of it that's interesting, and I think is what Jennifer says, is it's fun to say, what the bleep? How did this happen? But there are actual answers to the question, what the bleep?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want it to start at just the fun of how did this is bonkers. You shouldn't do that. And who was in it? And then they did this and mm-hmm. the sexy VR. It's all fun and it is all great. But again, there are answers and they're really interesting. And they have a lot to tell us about entertainment and generational change and Lucas's relationship with his need to own it. Bruce Vilanch is a fascinating figure, and I Googled to make sure he's alive.
Yeah.
if people don't know, Bruce Vilanch is the head writer and the person who kind of ultimately, you know, took it into the direction where it became, you know, a, mm-hmm. a wild, strange variety show. So I have no doubt that this documentary is going to be fun, but I hope it does act. And maybe the trailer is just really emphasizing the fun in the bonkers, what the bleep, but I hope it does actually get into the sort of the step by step. This is how it happened. Cause I love jokes where, or those moments in life where every choice you made that day is logical, mm-hmm. but somehow, you know, you end up in a position that like, you're alone in a room, somebody opens the door, you're shirtless, you are covered in soup, and there's a $5 bill burning in your hand. And you're like, every step along this path made perfect sense. And if you could see it from my perspective, you would understand that I thought I was making good choices, but somehow we ended up here. What? And that question of how did we end up burning money covered in soup, that's what's interesting.
What Scribshaw sketch was that? That is amazing. I agree with both of you here. I'll agree with both. I'll say this to start. The only thing I'm super familiar with of this duo, Jeremy Kuhn was part of the Raiders, the documentary of the group of friends that tried to recreate Raiders of the Lost Ark in the 80s, shot by shot on VHS tapes and VCRs, and then try to finish it later on in life to get the one final shot they need. And it's a fascinating doc, and I think it's got some heart to it, and that's my hope. And it's scary. And by the way, this is a trailer, and the trailer's going to sell what the bleep part of it there. So I think all three of us are approaching it with hope. I think we've been, as fans, burned before by some of this, or just had our taste change. I think 20 years ago, 15, maybe even 10 years ago, I would have wanted this doc just to lambaste that silly little thing. That might have been where my heart was. It's not where my heart is anymore. And I just want to know more, and I want to find what's there. Achmena, and, you know, Krauman, all those kind of things. Like you know, Mark Hamill's makeup. I don't care. It's all fun. It's all part of it. It's changed. And I don't want a people versus George Lucas approach to things anymore.
Exactly.
Because I think it can be more dangerous and destructive. And to clear, not three of us aren't saying that we haven't seen it. We've only seen the trailer. I'm speaking for myself here. My defenses go up nowadays where it's just like, what are you trying to do with this? And what's the point? And maybe it's got a great point. I will absolutely watch this when I can. And I love a lot of the names involved. And look, Weird Al's a sweetie. Kevin Smith mm-hmm. cries when he sees Star Wars stuff. Bonnie, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, we all know personally and is just a hoot and very knowledgeable about this stuff. So I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, I think all of us, little radar beeps. I'm like R2 outside of Echo Base. Just do, 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 do.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, and if it is really just having fun and talking about the reactions to people who saw it or discovered it later in life, and like, there's nothing wrong with it just being fun, but
yeah.
you know, but there is a lot of good research and a lot of good yeah. interviews out there. And if you are really curious, if you don't know a lot about it, hopefully this will add even more insight, but there are, you know, plenty of resources to figure out how yeah. this happened.
Yeah. Like for example, Bea Arthur's kind of inclusion, people were like, oh, Bea Arthur, that's so weird, you know, Golden Girls. It's like, no, at the time she was extremely popular with her series Maude. Mm-hmm. And so her inclusion was like a big name. And she also was like interested. I mean, she also has a background in musicals and she's a great singer. And so she really wanted to sing. And so then they brought in this team to come up with a song for her so that she could sing because that was what she wanted to do. And it is this weird moment, right? Mm-hmm. but it fits, and it all, like you're saying, like it all makes sense and the reasoning behind it. But I don't know. You're right. It'll be fun. I don't want it to be a George Lucas, like that George Lucas documentary.
It get to be clear, we're open to it. I think speaking honestly about what it makes me feel. The time period is very interesting angle of it. You mentioned Harvey Korman. I mean, I don't know, that's the equivalent of Will Ferrell being cast in a Star Wars holiday thing now. I don't know the exact modern equivalent, and I think a lot of our listeners know Harvey Korman, but yeah, that kind of stuff is fascinating. I want to know.
I mean, I think for me, part of the reason that I feel strongly about the actual story being communicated is because I am so invested in the changes in entertainment in eras, you know. And I, college, I became a huge fan of Frank Sinatra and Martin and Lewis and Ella Fitzgerald, and then going back even farther to Bing Crosby and to kind of like the whole history, and then being a live performer myself and really first starting those steps into doing comedy, and to understand the evolution of entertainment, of American entertainment, that the variety show is, especially in the late 70s, is the last throes of the death of vaudeville. The idea that entertainment should be a little bit of everything. Vaudeville translates into variety shows. You know, you've got entertainers who like the whole, you know, Sinatra era, Diane Carroll, even lots of people who are like, this is entertainment. This is how we do it, right? And it's this confusing time where variety show isn't bonkers. Mm-hmm. It's the 70s. You know, sorry, I will contain myself.
Great.
Imagine a asteroid, a dinosaur ending asteroid like moment with the Beatles. Elvis kind of rocked things for no pun intended, for people like Sinatra and that entire era of entertainment, but they were able to kind of work with that. And then the Beatles just basically wiped a version of entertainment off of the map musically that variety shows are very, very connected to.
Right.
It's about the year 1965. Everything changes. And so by the time you get to 70s, there's this confusion where variety shows are still in existence, but the kind of the people who made them what they were are in their twilight period, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the new talent is kind of trying to do something different with them, you know? It's just a very weird and interesting time that has a lot to tell us about who we are and how our tastes change in entertainment and why. And that's what's really interesting to me about this, is it's not a bonkers idea to go, oh, that Star Wars thing came out, it's kind of for all ages, it's kind of a little campy, you want to make it entertaining, well, we'll put it in this package. They didn't know that variety shows were about to die.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway. Yeah. Sorry.
Even that's a weird mix. Star Wars is this game changer in a lot of ways, but it's also built on everything that came in the past, came from the past. George's youth and youthful interests, and so to have that kind of combined with something so at the time modern but dying, like you said, it's part of the bonkers nature of it. There, love it.
Yeah.
So anyways, now we'll see. We'll travel to South by Southwest tomorrow. The one thing, Jen, I turn to you again here. And for those who want to know, go way back in the Force Center archives. I think it's our first year. Or early in the second, you'll have Jen's Jedi Beat episode with Bonnie Burton on it. Talk about the holiday special. Will the fascination with holiday special ever end or change, become something different? Do we even want it to end? From our generation, I didn't see it live, even though I was around at that point. We were watching the Mandrell sisters in our house. You know, it was an urban legend. It was almost not even real. It was like, what are you talking about? And you'd see little clips or something would pop up and wow, I don't know what I'm seeing. So will this fascination, Jen, ever really come to an end?
I don't think it's going to ever come to an end, because new people or younger people are going to be discovering it over the years. I don't want it to end, but it is why I would love to have a documentary like Joseph was talking about, it really from a historical perspective of what was happening during that time in the entertainment industry. I think it's just so interesting and valuable. I mean, it's, you know, why we love documentaries about the silent age of cinema, right? It's kind of the same thing, but told through the lens of the Star Wars holiday special. sorry if you hear my little Ewok in the background. But I love it so much. And, you know, maybe it's because I grew up watching Nick at Night and so many old shows that I genuinely love it, like genuinely, not just ironically. And it really makes me want to do my own documentary.
Maybe that's what we need to do. That's the next Force Center Patreon goal. It's a big one.
Hey, you know what? I can remaster my old Jedi Beat Happy Beeps. Yeah. I'll put like footage with it and we put it on, Patreon or something. I totally would be up for that.
Beautiful. Let's get Jen's version out there. I love that.
Yeah.
I ask you the same series of questions, Joseph.
Yeah, no, I don't think the fascination will ever end, and I don't think it should, because I think it is bonkers, you know, and that is really fun, and it is fun to ask why, and it is also fun to search for those answers. I think one of the other things that's fascinating for me is I get older, is like, yeah, I did watch this. I have mostly traumatic memories of the stormtroopers trying to take away a Wookiee's toys. That's what I thought it was mainly about. I didn't even remember the singing, you know, and then I saw it as an adult and was like, wow, two great tastes that maybe shouldn't go together. I don't know. But then I become more fascinated as, you know, we all go on this journey of kind of digging into like, what are the core ideas of Star Wars? And the fact that it does start with a very Lucas idea, right? Of he's too busy to watch over it all. He gives it off to somebody accompanying people that he trusts, and then that shifts and then it becomes a weird variety show, but that he starts off with this idea of like, I really like the Wookiees. I like their community. I like, you know, that this is for Lucas, it really is early Ewoks, right? It's a story about family and empathy and embracing the whimsical side of Star Wars, and that Star Wars is joyful. It's not just about being cool, right? Mm-hmm. These core ideas that Lucas starts with are really fun to track down. And it's really fun to ask yourself, if Lucas actually did say, oh, no, wait, you're turning into a variety show, I'm coming back in and I'm making this, how much would be different? I think maybe less singing.
Maybe.
But Wookiee's growling and the sense of Han owes it to Chewie to get him home for the holidays.
Yeah.
That's pure Lucas in a whimsical side of Star Wars that people still sometimes struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think looking at it from that lens makes it really fascinating as well.
I love all this. This is great. Yeah. There's value to be found in it. And it's not just the Boba Fett animated sequence, which is fascinating and on awesome. Disney Plus. And I think if you watch that now and then go watch an episode of Mando or Book of Boba Fett, you go, oh, I see what Favreau's trying to do. He's just trying to write that episode over and over and over again. And I mean that in a great way. So, yeah, there's a lot to it, of course, a lot of history. And I'm with you both. I don't want the fascination to end. I just don't think it will end, because part of the joy of Star Wars is the table gets bigger and bigger and bigger and new people show up and you discover this naturally. Maybe it's listening to us. Maybe it's someone says it at a party, or maybe you see something on the internet and you just go, what? And that's how it will happen. And hopefully I think the times have changed where it's not just about finding value in it. It's seeing what is there and seeing all the stuff you're both talking about there. So, hey, we'll give it a chance. Disturbs in the Force, how the Star Wars holiday special happened. Maybe we'll have an exclusive review that, we'll let Jen write all the questions for that one to see if it passes the test.
All right. It'll be fun.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the documentary. I think, I think I'm just really excited about the behind the scenes. Like I said, the trailer's fun. And if the documentary is just having fun with this bonkers thing, that's fine too. But I'm hungry for more people to be digging into the depth.
Exactly.
There you go. You're hungry like the Wookiee. All right. First news story done. We're going to take a break. But before we do, we're going to let you know. Force Center audiobook, we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have today?
We are still recommending Path of Deceit by Justina Ireland and Tessa Grattan. It is a High Republic adventure that we really want to read.
We do. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. Help the show and help yourself all at once. Quick break and the other side, more news here on ForceCenter.
Hold up. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to Force Center. We are here looking at Star Wars news. And, well, here's another weird one. So much to approach. There's so many different ways to approach this next story. So let's just get it started and see where it goes here. This is the weird tale of the Rogue One hallway scene. I think most of our Force Center listeners are probably aware, but sometimes you're lucky and your head's not in the internet and you go live your life and you don't get all the Star Wars discourse or news hubbubs going on. So here's the TLDR on the situation. Freddie Prinze Jr. was on a vodcast and said that Dave Filoni directed the Darth Vader hallway scene in Rogue One and had them recast Darth Vader for the scene. That was, that's again, the TLDR. We'll get into all the details there, but then, like wildfire, this spread across the online Star Wars world. Now, I will say this, it was from Freddy. He said it. It's on video. So I don't have any issues with any websites parroting the story, quote unquote, reporting it. I think how you dig into it and take that information, how you present it, might be some of the things we discuss here. But Freddie did say it. It was not someone hiding in a parking lot spying on a set down below. It was from his mouth. But the story was called false by almost everyone involved in the production of Rogue One that still has an active Twitter account, most notably Pablo Hidalgo, Hal Hickel, and Gary Whitta, all who shared detailed accounts of the shoot. Gareth Edwards was involved in the scene, looks to have been shot by the second unit director, Simon Crane. You can maybe dive into who directed versus who was there on set, but they were both there is the point. So, friends, Joseph, Jennifer, I ask, why? Why all of this, Joseph?
Oh, man, where to start?
So
I, I think let's start here because I don't want to be personally be too harsh on Mr. Prince Jr. Fabulous gift of Kanan's performance that he has given the fandom, and clearly just a great fan and ambassador of Star Wars. My opinion is that there's a little bit of a telephone game going on. I think with this quote and, you know, a splash he made a few years back with discussions about Balance of the Force, which was it was him on a podcast, I believe, and he was saying, hey, Dave, you know, learned from George, and Dave explained this all to me, and he said a lot of really compelling and really interesting things. And I think with both of those statements, in my opinion, there are elements of truth. I think he really had conversations with Filoni. I think this is what he really took away from them. But I think they have changed shape a little bit by the time it becomes the interview and we hear it. So obviously Filoni was, you know, on set, you know, because we know about his whole Kathleen Kennedy giving him the opportunity to work with the directors and move toward live action. Great. And I'm sure he did share some Vader thoughts and ideas and suggestions. And then I think through the telephone game, it becomes a more concrete statement than truth. That's where I start with. Why did he say it? That's my guess and my assumption. So that's where I'm starting. I pitch back to you and Jennifer.
And Jen, get you in on this there, but I agree with that take there. There's nothing in watching the video that I think, I don't think Freddie's playing a game. I don't think he's trying to get misinformation out there. You know, he is, he's an interesting cat, been around him a couple times and very nice and very funny and very, goofy in a way. Like I have a positive feeling, when I think of him and his name and his involvement in Star Wars. So watching the clip as I did, yeah, I'm with you. I don't think he was like, hey, here's what I'm going to do. I think it just came out of something. And look, I sometimes have messed up a little detail here or there in my life. You know, I'm not, it's not like Brian Williams lying about his, you know, interactions in the military or what happened and all that stuff that got him in trouble. Where, you know, it's not that situation. It's just was I there or not? I can't remember. And it happened. So I think that's where a good starting point, Jen, about how this all came about.
Yeah. I think, you know, Freddie Prinze Jr., it just seems like it was an honest mistake. He thought it was an interesting thing to share, an interesting tidbit, so he shared it, right? But because he is Freddie Prinze Jr., it's going to go viral. And there's also a narrative around Rogue One that, you know, Tony Gilroy saved it and Gareth Edwards basically did nothing. And so it kind of feeds into that a little bit. And so I think that's also why it went viral. It just was kind of shocking to actually see so many people connected to the production going and then saying, no, this is wrong. Like, you don't often see that. But so that to me is like, oh no, it must've been flat out wrong. Also, it's a fantastic scene, is beloved by fans. So I think there is kind of like this curiosity of, oh, well, who really did direct it? Right. And was it Gareth Edwards actually in that scene? Am I correct? Right.
In the version. Yeah.
Right. So, and basically it was second unit director Simon Crane that directed it. Is that 100% sure?
The only reason I bring that up is there was some like, no, Gareth directed it using that term. And some people all know second unit director Simon Crane directed it, which wouldn't be abnormal. Yeah. And it just like kind of might be what you said, Jen. I didn't go through all the tweets this morning to remind myself. That's the only reason I just want to, you know, try to parse that out a little bit. All hands on deck, I guess, working on that scene.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm sure Gareth was there. I'm sure he was a part of it. I'm sure Simon Crane was there. Peter Jackson was supposedly there.
I saw that and I was like, was just everyone there? Every director in the world, Tarantino, Smith, everyone was there. Everyone was just hanging out.
Yeah.
Did you know Werner Herzog directed that scene?
Right. I mean, can you imagine? I'm sure everyone wanted to be there. It's like when The Mandalorian or like when Hayden came back to Kenobi, everyone wants to see this moment. I'm not surprised. But I personally, this is what I'm learning. You know, unless you're there on set and you have seen it yourself, I think we have to be careful with how we share it.
Yeah. And just want to get some of your thoughts on the great things Jen said there too. I just kind of remember one of the things that I think I was even part of. The urban Star Wars myth of Spielberg directed some of the fighting in Revenge of the Sith, right? I think a lot of it heard that. And I've just kind of said that as like, yeah, it's a thing I heard. It wasn't until the last couple of years I was sitting with someone who was like, no, my sword the guy who trains me in sword fighting was the stunt coordinator on that film, and absolutely says no.
Nick Gillard?
Someone else. It was not Nick Gillard. But if someone involved, and they were like, no. Now I don't know that person. I can't verify what that person said. But you know what I mean? It's like then you kind of go. It made me go, oh yeah. I guess I never really dug into it. You know, I just heard it. Right. I just heard it and I just said it. I even said this. Harrison Ford. I thought he lived in my hometown. He and Calista Flockhart. Someone actually, I was at a film event a year ago. Goes no. He just used to fly up and down the coast, stop and have lunch. He never lived here. But we grew up thinking he lived there. Like it was just something we all said. So that's how this stuff flies, where, you know, there's no ill will behind it. Anyways, Joseph, Jen brought up a lot of wonderful thoughts, particularly on the Filoni is obviously great, but Garrett did this and Gilroy comes in. There's a lot of that. And this scene does come up a lot in those kind of discussions.
Yeah, I think there's a part of me that I really agree with Jennifer said of it's a fascinating scene. I know Ken, you did a short about it recently. I love that scene because it is just this concentration of Star Wars. It is both on one hand the most like cool, let's watch Vader is a horror movie. This is Vader's Michael Myers, amazing. Mm-hmm. But then there's also like great depth to it of the lesson of it. He still doesn't get what he wants. So I understand why people would sort of gravitate to it and want to know the truth of it. But I think a lot of it does come down to the interest in it is this sort of behind the scenes trying to figure out, I don't know which director we're going to upvote. I don't know. I don't, you know, I think there is a little bit of like, we want to know what's behind the scenes, but you know, some of the discourse has been, well, this person should be in charge of everything. Dave Filoni should be in charge of everything. Now Tony Gilroy should be in charge of everything. Now Jon Favreau should never touch Star Wars again. Like that kind of discourse about sort of what we invest in the creator and which creator we elevate, I think can get to be a big talking point. And you know what? Leave Gareth Edwards alone is my opinion at this point. That person has been through a lot and has been in, from what I can see, an amazing team player who has kept the focus on the film. And we wanted to make a good film. It ended up being a team effort and we did it, you know?
Yeah.
And there is so much confusion about what happened with those reshoots, rewrites, who had the label, the director, who was sitting in the chair, who was literally telling the camera person, who was literally saying action to the camera person on what scene, when. I think it's really complex. I think there are a lot of people who've read one or two headlines and like Harrison Ford eats lunch here turns into Harrison Ford lives here.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of people who feel like they know what happened behind the scenes of Rogue One. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really complicated. And I think only the people who are there know. And I think only the people there know the part of it that they know. So I really agree with Jennifer that part of it is about this sort of fascination with the behind the scenes and Rogue One in particular becoming this almost like unsolvable mystery that people want to know the truth, you know?
Yeah, especially as the appreciation of that movie at times seems to grow, even though it was a $1 billion movie back then. It seems like over the years, a lot of people cite that as one of their favorites more than I think even I heard in 2016 and 2017 range. So I think that, you know, I want to know. I want to know every detail. What's not to love about that? You know, one of my favorite movies is Tombstone. Kurt Russell ghost directed it, but you know, like I want to know all the stories. That's part of the fun being a movie fan, but I think it can be used in so many different ways. And I think it was telling, to your point, Joseph, it's telling that these folks, Gary Whitta, who was in a room with Gareth long before, you know, when the writings, I had a chance to interview Gary on an old YouTube channel, GPA, and I asked him, and he was telling these stories of being over on the Disney lot here in Burbank in a room, cracking the story with him. So he's got something to tell about that story. Pablo, obviously, this is a movie you clearly, Pablo put a lot of love into and seemed to be a little bit more involved. You see more pictures and videos of him on set. So he's got the experiences. And Hal Hickel, who's wonderfully outspoken in so many different ways in life. But it meant a lot to me that they were just like, we're not giving you the details. And no shade against Freddie. We don't know why he said that. But here's some of the stuff that happened because we were there. It shows some ownership on the film and a defense of Gareth in a way. Just, again, nothing on Filoni, Gilroy, all of it. But Gareth is absolutely a team player. You don't see any shady, vague subtweets from him. You don't see anything. He just went out there and sold this movie as his effort, the dream job he had that maybe didn't go the way he planned. But he stuck with it, stuck with the team. And I think that's being reflected here, too, in these stories.
No, I really agree. And I think there is this element, too, of just like, what does this tell us about where we're at with entertainment journalism, but also journalism in general, right? Like, especially when we were younger, sorry for the yelling at the clouds, everybody, but like, hey, if somebody thinks Harrison Ford lives in your town and he doesn't, that's an urban myth. Those things happen sometimes, right?
Yeah.
But now we're getting to this point where extremely, extremely important critical things are needing to be determined as true or not true. And at the end of the day, let's speak truth. Let's not give the wonderful Dave Filoni credit for something he didn't do. He's already done lots of amazing things and he's got more to come. He's doing great. Love his work. Let's defend Gareth Edwards. That has a value in and of itself, but I think it has an extra value right now when a headline that maybe the article goes into more depth.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Sometimes the articles don't go in more depth, but even when they don't, everybody putting out a headline knows thousands to millions of people are going to run with just the headline. And I think that's why this matters. And I think in other eras of journalism, in a perfect world of journalism, if one person said this, the headline would be Freddie Prinze Jr. claims. And that would be in the headline instead of the entire time. The entire time, instead of headlines to just say Dave Filoni directed the Vader hallway scene, right?
Yes.
Or in other eras, a journalist would get a second person to verify that, or would call people who were there and would have already vetted the story. And that's not what entertainment, a lot of entertainment journalism is right now. It's just something juicy happened, throw it up on your site for clicks as fast as humanly possible. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, the triumph of this story is all these people who are there coming out and going, you know what? There's no shade of gray on this one. So we're going to just come out and say, no, truth matters.
Mm-hmm.
No, again, no shade to Freddie Prinze Jr., misunderstanding, whatever. It happens. That's not a big deal. But I felt the line must be drawn here, Picard quote in the souls of Pablo Hidalgo and Hal Hickel and Gary Whitta saying, this one is clear. It's black and white. That's not true.
Yeah.
They're going to have to do more of it because everything you're saying is so spot on. I've been reading a book on broadcast journalism. It is a little old school and there's a whole chapter on ethics and, verifying your sources and not running a story because you want to be the first, but you want to get it right. And we are in a day and age where that's just not going to happen anymore because people do want to get clicks and people do want to be first. And they are purposely, or maybe they just are not going to get the answers, whatever. They're just going to run the story, whether they have the sources or not. Mm-hmm. So I hope that people who are involved, it was great. They didn't have to say anything more than just, nope, that's not true. I was there. That's all they had to say, right? But I think it kind of like shuts down that discourse and that like ugly side of the fandom that just starts to like, yeah, and see Gareth was not direct. No, it just shuts it down. And I hope that they do more of that if these things kind of do continue to run, which we know that they will because, People want to get clicks.
This would be a great short. You out there want to build your Star Wars podcast? Do a short right now on, you know, even now, today. Dave Filoni directed the scene. And what do you think? You got 15 million views right there in your short. All right. That would go. And Joseph, your point of, you know, the word claims goes a long way. And I think that's part of it. And I love this, the James Gunns, the James Mangolds who just kind of go out there, and just kind of, no, because there's this weird battle. This goes into different spots, I guess. Weird battle on creators of this type, right? Right. These movements to, now that Gunn's in charge, DC will take him down. Oh, he's lied. And it's just weird thing of just that versus the truth. And often these folks are just on the side of, no, I was there. It was the truth. I'm James Mangold. I was the one who made this movie. I can tell you this isn't happening in Indy 5. Like, it's nice to see. And you know, Pablo's out there a lot and has been on the front lines of this, but so is Hal Hickel. And Gary Whitta is a very outspoken guy too. I liked it. That's my take on those three guys. I liked it.
I liked it too. I also will say to the majority of the outlets' credits that I saw, like Star Wars Newsnet, immediately corrected it and clarified it. A ton of outlets that I think are striving to do, you know, true entertainment journalism did immediately correct the story. So kudos to everybody who did that.
Yeah, it's important. Look, again, anyone can start a website, and that's not, I'm not saying that cynically, but I think it comes down to sometimes of, you know, hey, but that's a real job. The journalist thing is a real job, and you can start on that path and maybe build a great career from your house doing your own website. But there's things that come with that you need to do that maybe you don't need to follow the standards to get big clicks and get a big following. And that's part of the problem as well. But again, I don't want to be old man yelling at clouds. It's not in my day, Walter Cronkite would have asked three people, but it's just, it works for a reason. And you kind of look around and go, oh, here's where we are. And here's why.
I just want to say that on Hal Hickel's tweet where he's like, don't spread this story, it's not true, somebody commented, can you show proof it's not true? And he's like, well, I was on set. So just like, this is the day and age that we live in. Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah. I love your Walter Cronkite comparison. I'm imagining Walter Cronkite taking his glasses off and with a heavy sigh saying, it turns out Dave Filoni directed the Vader Holloway scene.
Mea culpa. I got that wrong. It's the old Carvey Broca, you know.
Yes.
Charles Haar. Dave Filoni did not direct it. Look, that Harrison Ford story only has, I just grew up with that. Like, there was people who used to always say, oh, he's at Scrambles in Avila Beach or Pismo Beach. And he's like, and I even, with someone said, oh, it's that house on the hill in Pismo, because my friend's dad was a contractor and he was up there doing drywall for Calista and Harrison. Right. And so you don't question it. It's 1995. And in 2020, two, I was up there at the Central Coast Film Society and just told the story and forgot to, you know, I just said it as fact. And someone in front of like 300 people was like, yeah, no. So, hey, I worked at the airports when he would land in his plane, breakfast and fly away. He'd go up and down the coast a lot because he's Harrison Ford. It was embarrassing in that way of like, oh, yeah, I guess I shouldn't just accept everything in that way, or shouldn't phrase it that way. Like, what you're, this is your claims thing, Joseph, like the certain words can allow for the truth to find it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's deep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that happens in our discussions. I think it's a valid part of criticism analysis of media to look at, you know, a creative piece and say, like, I think the director has negative feelings about this idea and is putting them in this film, right? That's that level is a part of analyzing the text, right?
Right.
What the creators of their own soul and life is putting into the text. But that has become that blurry line between opinion, right? Where you run into these conversations and people go like, well, it's true that, you know, this episode of this television show is bad because so-and-so is lazy now. Like, that's not a fact. That's an opinion and an analysis, and you're welcome to it. But you literally can't know, I don't like Coro Talakan because Dave Filoni, you know, was gassy that day. You don't know that. It's fine that you don't like Toro. It's fine if you want to analyze You know, right. What if Dave Filoni's soul is in Toro Calican? But reporting it, even in a casual conversation, is a truth you know.
Yeah.
It's not a truth you know. It isn't.
Sometimes we tiptoe around things, sometimes we run straight into them, but it's like, to your point, Jen, too, it's like you this is what you see out there. You know, that someone goes, that's not true, another person goes, well, how do you know? Well, I'm a scientist, I study this field. It's where I got my doctorate in. A guy on a TikTok told me, and it's just kind of,
oh my gosh,
where we're at. Harrison Ford only flies up and down the coast to go to scrambles. All right.
I want to go to beautiful. Scrambles.
It's still, yeah. I think scrambles is still there. There was a couple locations. It was, and then, side note. Yeah. Then someone said, well, you know, Mark Hamill lives up here too. And we could never prove that or not. So finally later on, when I become friends with Nathan, I do ask him, did you guys ever live in Avila Beach? And he was like, what? No, I think we went vacation there once. I don't know. It just becomes a thing. And it's funny. But it's also, look where we're at. It can get tragic real fast.
There you have it. I'm going to go on a different podcast. And I'm going to say, hey, you know what Ken Napsok told me? Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill live in the basement of a restaurant named Scramble. It's true.
Facts. All facts.
Hashtag facts.
Facts, facts, facts. All right. Weird story. It went a lot of places, but I actually really enjoyed having that conversation. It purged some of the tension I had in my heart for that story this last couple of days. Hey, before we get out of here, as we do This Week in Star Wars History, looking ahead to Star Wars Past, and we are going all the way to the end of the week on March 12th, 2002. Oh, where were you? The unveiling of Drew Struzan's Attack of the Clones release poster took place, appearing on movie theaters, and this new fandangled online thing. The poster featured Padme and Anakin in an Across the Stars type pose, and also at Obi-Wan, beard and all, Jango Fett in the Battle of Geonosis, as we would come to discover, front and center. So what do you think of this poster in 2002, Jen?
You know, I'm not sure what I remember of it then, but what I think of it now is it is iconic. It is my favorite of the prequel posters, and it's actually the one that first comes to mind when I think of the prequels, because Hayden and Natalie Portman, they look so romantic, so beautiful. Ewan McGregor looks so confident and dashing, and, you know, Jango, just the whole thing. It just feels, and it also has a very retro vibe to it that I love. It really pops, and it still holds up, and it is a favorite.
I love that. Love that take. Joseph, we know this now as one of your favorite Star Wars films, celebrated for a lot of wild, wondrous reasons. There's a lot of parts in it that I love now way more than I loved then, and therefore I enjoy everything about this film, even the things I don't like, if that makes sense. This poster got me excited. Because also, by the way, it was like, all right, I know they made a switch in Anakin, and what is that going to be like? And this was kind of, for me, you know, confirmation of, all right, it looks like Star Wars. I'm here to approach it with an open heart. So I loved it back then. What about you and your journey with it?
Yeah, no, I have always loved this film for the things I love about it. I love some of the things that people don't like, and the things that I think are a little clunky or don't work are still fascinating to me. I think that's part of it, why it's one of my favorites. Is like, yeah, I don't think it's absolutely perfect, but the ways in which it are flawed, in my opinion, are fascinating. And there's so much that I love and don't think is at all flawed. But I love this this period of buildup. Everything that I kept hearing about Attack of the Clones seemed like it was sort of addressing some of the things that I wanted to see in The Phantom Menace with. What is the deal with the clones? Anakin, who is, you know, at least a teen, if not a full adult, but, you know, doing Jedi stuff, full Jedi stuff, and, you know, more Jedi in action. No, Jango Fett, what is this about? So I was so excited. I refreshed the StarWars.com website almost every day. Multiple times if I was procrastinating. But when this actual poster came out, I was on a trip to the UK with my then girlfriend. So I probably saw it when I got home a couple weeks later. But I loved this poster. I with Jen, I was so excited and intrigued by the romance in this poster. So puts not just Anakin and Padme's characters in the front, but the romance, right? Of mm-hmm. the way she's leaning on his shoulder. It's got that total star-crossed lovers vibe, which was a term I learned from an Empire Strikes Back trading card. The whole star-crossed lovers vibe and that, like, the, like, oh, this one's going to echo Empire Strikes Back, where you had posters like this, where it was Han and Leia, and romance was so in the forefront. So I was really intrigued by that. I thought Obi-Wan looked awesome. I can't fully see his mullet in this one. The promise of more action, Django. But the thing I really liked about it and like about it to this day is that one shot of Yoda, which taken out of the context of the film, Yoda, the little Yoda has this total vibe of, the hell did you just say to me?
Yes.
Yes.
And I absolutely love that. So love this poster.
It's great. And it's the Django of it all is interesting too, because I can't remember exactly when the trailers had come out, all the stuff, but I do remember around the time, the only understanding I had of Django that this character we're going to see, other than the connections to Boba, of course, was Tim Morrison with a umbrella in the rain on the set dancing. It's like somehow that photo would come out kind of earlier first. And it was a behind the scenes poster or photo. I knew that. But so to see him on the poster, I was like, oh, okay, maybe now I get it. Oh, this might be good. This might be good. So not that I didn't like him dancing in the rain, but it was just like, what's going on? What are we doing?
What is this, the holiday special?
I need to talk about this. What do we love about Drew Struzan's prequel work overall? This is one of those things that I'm always fascinated with, where it is now ancient history, his prequel posters, but it was brand new stuff then. It was, a couple years removed from his work with the special edition, re-release posters, all that kind of stuff. He's obviously a legend in the business. There's a great doc of him out there, I think on YouTube I was watching it. Jen, your relationship to his work?
He's a legend. And that Phantom Menace poster, I do love that one too. Mm-hmm. With Darth Maul kind of looming in the background. And I think Revenge of the Sith also has Darth Vader kind of looming in the background. Mm-hmm. But what I loved about those posters is that they did feel kind of like vintage and retro and kept consistent with the Star Wars that I loved and that I grew up with. And so there is that kind of consistency, even though the prequels were such a departure from what I had expected. And obviously, in a wonderful way now. I think it's wonderful how he maintained that kind of consistency in style and tone.
Yeah. No, modern classics is the way I look at them there. And yeah. I feel sometimes like we were there when these were new kids. I love that. It's the old people in clouds episode of Force Today. Joseph, I know you love these films, these movies, and these pieces of art. But what's your take on Drew Struzan's prequel work overall?
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. It is the life you live. You can't help when you were born. And I remember when these were new. So being that these are, classic now to a lot of people is really, really great. I agree with Jennifer, too. I think they felt new. They looked new, but they felt like this is the late 90s, early 2000s sort of commenting about the past. It is both new and old. Mm-hmm. So perfect for Star Wars. I also think there's a powerful legacy to them into a lot of Drew Struzan's artwork, because a lot of poster styles are like this of like, let them know that there are a lot of characters and a lot going on in the movies. And I think some of them have gotten too busy. And I feel like, Drew Struzan is one of the OGs of this poster art, and mm-hmm. the composition is still really powerful and really clear. So I think it's kind of, he's kind of the forebearer of a lot of what we have now, but in some ways like, the old classic who did it right.
There's a little bit of that energy too. So great stuff. They look great on walls if you want to get them and frame them. And I like too that we're going back to the day and age, but it was like, it just made those new Star Wars movies feel like classics within the era as well, despite the journey that I had with them personally. All right, we're out of here today. We've gone deep on these news stories. I thought it was going to be a quick little job, but we had a lot to say about these stories, and I hope you all enjoyed the ride. We're almost out of here. I'll let you know where you can find us. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram, and as we mentioned, YouTube as well. Shorts, essays, figure fights episode is up there, the third one. third one is up there right now. Take a look at that one. Dark Ray versus Hermie Odell. Podcast is available on Acast, iHeartRadio, and a lot of other spots. Just search, you'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/4Center. You can support on patreon.com/4Center. Support us directly. We reach one goal, more on the way. Of course, the Indiana Jones and the Perilous podcast episodes will drop on March 20th, like Joseph said. Exclusive to Patreon supporters up until the release of Dial of Destiny. You can follow me at Catnapsock or go to catnapsock.com for more information on all the things I do. Fortnite clips, blathering clip outs, all those things are on my YouTube channel and Instagram page as well. Jen, where can they find and follow you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter and YouTube at Jennifer Landa. I'm posting every week about The Mandalorian. And I also have some random things where I think last week I did a review of the Haunted Mansion trailer because it was actually good. and of course, TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138. So you can check me out at all those places.
Great stuff. I saw the Haunted Mansion thing. So there you go, kids. Watch it. Joseph, where can they find you?
You can find me watching the Haunted Mansion trailer and then Jennifer's analysis, because I haven't seen either of them yet. And I'm very excited. Very excited. But you can also find me on all the social media is at Joseph Scrimshaw. Twitter, if it's still working when this podcast is released, it seems to break a little bit more each day. Also on Instagram, some more friends have been joining me over there. So that'd be great to find me on Instagram. Also on TikTok and YouTube, I'm continuing to do my not unboxing videos and more short films and stuff coming to my YouTube channel. Just search for Joseph Scrimshaw.
There it is, my friends. Just search, and search. We'll see you next time here on 4Center.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.